Welcome to the Do Good to Lead Well podcast. If you're passionate about mastering self-leadership, then you're in the right place. I have always been curious about and fascinated by the pursuit of leadership excellence. This is why I pursued my PhD in psychology with a specialization in business, and I've continued to dedicate my career to understanding the science and practice of positive leadership. My name is Craig Dowden. I'm a best-selling author, award-winning keynote speaker, executive coach, and member of the Forbes Coaches Council. Each week, I'll bring you world-class content on the science and practice of positive leadership. Through my conversations with best-selling authors, TED speakers, and top CEOs, you'll be able to leverage their insights and experience so you can maximize your potential and be the leader the world needs you to be.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Do Good to Lead Well webinar series. Really appreciate that you've made the time to join us this morning. I am very excited to have a conversation. I wish we had long. I could talk all morning and afternoon with my guest today, and so very, very excited. And for those of you who are new, welcome. Really appreciate you checking us out. For those of you who have been here before, welcome back. Glad to have you join us. Essentially, I have the profound privilege to talk to CEOs, thought leaders, best-selling authors. Alexandra is no different in this regard. And I will be able to do her bio justice. And I'm really excited to dig deep into the topics we're going to be talking about this morning. But as a brief introduction, I would highly recommend that you check out her book. I downloaded it on Kindle. I normally, as you know, show the book. So I've gone through it in Kindle and it was fantastic. She's the director of the Mediation Clinic at Columbia Law School. So she's also an award-winning professor there and a world-renowned negotiation trainer for the United Nations. And she draws on her experience in the book through that, which is really, really beneficial. She also serves as an executive director of Stand Up Girls, helping tween girls develop relationships for greater self-esteem and resilience. She's appeared in a variety of the top profile outlets, so like CBS This Morning, MSNBC's Live Weekend, Hardball Marketplace. She's been in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal. She's a best-selling author of Ask for More, 10 Questions to Negotiate Anything. So really happy to welcome Alexandra this morning to the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's nice to be here, Craig and everybody. Thanks for spending this morning together.
Well, I've had lots of people comment on how much they're looking forward to this. I'm actually going to literally take one of the things in your book and put it into practice right away because I love how you talk about put things into practice. So tell me about yourself.
I love that, Craig. And in fact, just to take people behind the scenes, you know, when I submitted my book proposal and landed an agent, we then submitted to a number of publishers. I did a bunch of calls with publishers and every single one of them got on the phone and said, so tell me, Alex, you know, a bit about the book and your work, and told me they were trying that out. So what can I tell you about me, Craig? So I grew up in the New York metro area in the suburbs on Long Island. I went to college in D.C. and then spent some time in Asia after that. Eventually, I found my way to Columbia Law School, where, to be honest, I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. I don't know anybody else on this webinar has experienced this, but I knew I probably wanted to go to graduate school. And I thought, I don't think medical school's for me. And I really don't like Excel. So I'm probably not going to go to business school. I guess that means I'm going to go to law school. My dad's a lawyer. And here's what's going to happen. But I had no idea what that would lead me to until my last year, when a friend of mine pulled me aside and said, hey, Alex, I'm taking this class. It's called mediation. It involves a lot of talking. You'd be great at it. And with that recommendation, I enrolled in the class. That was the first time, Craig, I had ever heard of mediation or had any clue what it was. And the first moment I sat down in front of two people in a dingy jury room in a New York City court, I knew that that's what I was meant to do with the rest of my life. And so I spent a bit of time figuring out how to do that. I went out and worked as a litigator at a very large law firm. But eventually I found my way back and I'm now teaching that class that I took as a 3L student.
That's amazing. No, I love it. And I have to say, as I mentioned, like so many great things in this book. And to give some context, some added context for people, it's been endorsed by Doug Stone. So for those of you who've been part, he's been a guest on this webinar series, wrote an amazing book on difficult conversations, and thanks for the feedback. And he endorsed this book. Adam Grant, who you're also familiar with, who's been a part of this series before, he's endorsed the book. And I love how you provide really practical, tangible takeaways, and it's rooted in science, social science, behavioral science research. And I think that's such a powerful combination. You do that so, so well. And I love the title of the book, Ask for More, 10 Questions to Negotiate Anything. So my first question is, what prevents people from asking for more? Because I love that title. And what are the consequences when we don't do that?
Thank you. Yeah, Craig, I think a lot of people, and I made this mistake as a young professional, have completely the wrong idea of what it even means to negotiate. We think that it's basically a transactional back and forth over money, right? We're buying a car, we're asking for more salary, et cetera. Or, you know, unfortunately, like in my case, I see a lot of people who've gotten into court, right? And then they have to figure out how to negotiate their way out of it. And over time, I started to realize that this is a really limited, narrow, and kind of reactive way to think about negotiation. Like, we only do it when it's thrust upon us. We need the car. It's the once a year salary review, that type of thing. And I came up with a different definition after spending some time in a kayak on my honeymoon in Hawaii, when the guide, we were on this river, he looked at us and said, please negotiate your kayaks to the left so we can end up on that beach. And I thought, that's it. There's another definition. There's another way to think about this. It's not just transactional back and forth. Negotiation is just steering. It's steering relationships. It's thinking about all of the conversations in your life and how you can steer those, not waiting for the money conversation to teach someone how to think about me or to value me, to be piloting that in every conversation I had. And the second thing, Craig, is that what's the best way to steer relationships? It's not by making the loudest arguments. It's by asking the best questions. And so I think if more people knew that they didn't have to be the biggest, loudest, most aggressive person in the room to be a great negotiator, they would ask frequently and they would ask for more.
And again, in my work as a coach, just the power of questions. Traditionally, people see it as wild, just argue, I'll be loud, I'm going to make, you know, the most intellectual appeals. So what is it about questions that are so powerful and enable people to, and I love that, steer the conversation towards a desirable outcome?
I've seen a lot of posts of people doing those 1,000-piece puzzles. I have to tell you, I am not that person. Okay, the idea of 1,000 identical pink like puzzle pieces makes me want to crawl back into bed and have a nightmare. But for those of you who are puzzle pieces, I want you to imagine this. If I were to sit down with you and we're thinking about working together, and I ask you a question, Craig, like, would you like to see my portfolio of negotiation offerings? What is the answer to that question? It's yes, no, I'm not sure. In effect, kind of what you've done is like toss out one piece of that 1,000-piece puzzle. Instead, if I were to say to you, Craig, tell me what you're doing to equip your negotiators during this time. Tell me your company's greatest needs for the next quarter, the next 2 quarters, the next year, and beyond. That is a question that really helps toss out a bunch of pieces of the puzzle so that you can start to fill in a much broader picture. And that's what I want people to do with their questions. The magic of questions is this. It's actually twofold. It's much more, but there's at least two good reasons to ask questions. One is you create more trust across the table. If we sit down to negotiate, and instead of leading and saying, you know, Craig, I'm here to push you hard and show you my glossy pitch deck. Instead of that, if I demonstrate a sincere desire to get to know you better and really serve you and your company, right? You know, Adam Grant teaches this, right? That's giving to people, that's serving. And in negotiation, you're going to do better if you give. But the second thing it does is it gives me a hell of a lot more information, doesn't it? If all I know about you is whether you want to say yes to a particular offering, I know practically nothing about you. That's in service of me. That's not in service of you. But if I ask you to tell me about yourself, tell me about your company and this journey, tell me what you need right now. Tell me is the broadest possible question you can ask to get the most information possible. And when you have that information, you create better deals. Maybe at the end of that, Craig doesn't just say, well, Alex, yes, I'd like to take this program. Maybe he says, you know, this program's good for now. And then when we move out of quarantine, I want to think about this and this and this. Not just a better relationship, but you actually ask for more.
And I love the example that you provided in terms of your own personal experience of with your husband. You used to ask, how was your day? Which can lead to a very limited response set versus tell me about your day. And I was like, wow, that is such a, again, subtle twist, yet just opens up a whole myriad of possibilities around where they take the conversation. So I just got a question already. This is from David. How do you ask for more during this time? Because this is a really challenging period.
All right, David. So probably the entire audience thanks you, David, for asking that question, right? Because I've had that on a lot of people's minds. And in fact, that's one of the biggest questions I've gotten right now. I would think carefully about timing of your ask, right? So I would be thinking, I would not want to spring a surprise on anybody right now. I would be wanting to think carefully about, do I have a big product launch coming out that I know is going to go really well? Do I know what's going on for my manager or my CEO? Is there a good time? Maybe now when the investor calls are happening, not a good time. Maybe after that, or we raise our next round, that's the time. Okay, so first I would say pick your timing. The second thing I would do is I would do some research. There's a lot of informal sharing going on right now about what people are asking for, what the possibilities are. Because David, I want you to walk in and give management more than one way to say yes. I want you to think about all the different options you could offer, right? So for example, if cash burn is a super problem right now, I've talked to people where they've negotiated for equity or they've negotiated for deferred compensation or something else that's of value to them. And I would also think, David, about what's the problem you want to solve? Okay, so this is the first question in the book, and it's more than just saying, I want to go in and ask for 20%, because that may not solve your whole problem, David. I want you to think about your complete goal. What's the complete problem you want to solve? Because here's why. If, David, this isn't just about asking for more salary, but you're teaching people how to value you, maybe you see yourself, David, in the C-suite someday, if you're not already there. And so you want, in the course of this negotiation, to telegraph, I'm a leader. Right? You're going to compensate me more now, or you're going to promote me, but I also want to see this up the chain. And then my last piece of advice to you, David, is to make what's called an I, we ask. What does that mean? It means here's what I'm requesting, and here's how we all benefit. The reason you will know what the we is because you will have asked your manager some great questions. You will have asked her what she needs, what the company needs. You'll ask her, you know, what the possibilities are, the goals, any concerns she has. And then you're in the position to make that great I, we ask that's going to lead you much more likely to a successful outcome.
So Lauren said this, what kinds of questions can I ask my customers? And what types of questions should I avoid in those conversations? How can I negotiate in this context in a sales capacity?
Got it. Okay, Lauren, I feel your pain. Great question. I just had to market a book. And let me tell you, whew, in the end, I was like, hey, thank God the book works, you know, because I really put it to the test over the last couple of months. Okay. So Here's what I'm going to tell you. And in fact, Lauren, I'm in the midst now of writing out, I'm recording digital courses in 10 days. And one of the courses is going to be like using questions to turn a no into a yes, right? And words to use and words to avoid, especially during this time that you're in negotiation. So this is fresh on my mind and I have a few tips to give you now. So the first thing I would say is I still want you to lead with open questions. It's so important for sales right now. Why? Because again, Lauren, if I approach you and I say, you know, do you want to see my pitch deck or do you want to hear about my negotiation course offering? As a saleswoman, you know this, the automatic answer is no. So I would still be leading with tell me. And in fact, you know, Lauren, I want to tell you a story. I counseled a startup company during this time. And this is a company that produces a product that's doing super well in New York and LA. They really wanted to break into the middle of the country. And now here's the pandemic. Okay. So they called me because they got a call from a retailer in the Midwest and they were dying to break in. And they called me and they said, we've gone in twice before. We showed our pitch deck and we thought we had the deal. We didn't have the deal. So this time I was like, I have a question for you that I want you to go in and ask. So they walked in this time. They sat down and they said, we're so happy to be here. We've been here twice before. Tell us your concerns with our product. After a few seconds of stunned silence, the retailer said, okay, you want to know why you didn't get the deal? Here's why you didn't get the deal. I didn't think my customers were ready for this premium product. I didn't see the data there to support it. Recently, I'm not convinced, but I feel like the data are more mixed. And so I invited you in. So Lauren, my number one tip to you on a question to ask right now, because people will have concerns. The newsflash, they always have concerns about you or your product, no matter how awesome you are or how good the times are. There's always a concern. Asking people about their concerns tells you the target that you have to hit to overcome the barriers to agreement. So when in doubt, I would lead with tell me for an ordinary situation. And if you're trying to bust that no into a yes, ask them about their concerns. One question I would not ask is why. When you ask somebody a like, why don't you want this? Okay, it doesn't look confident and it really puts people on the defensive. In fact, why is never a question I ask. So even if I were negotiating with you, Lauren, and you said no, I would never say, why are you saying no? Instead, I would say, walk me through the no or tell me your concerns, Lauren. All right. So in other words, I would always go for tell me or what instead of why. I have more words to use and to avoid, but I think that's what we have time for today.
I think that's amazing. One of the questions I was going to ask is why such an ineffective question. I love how you touched on that. And what's really powerful as well is around how you're talking about tell me your concerns. So what do you think gets in the way of people asking others about their concerns? Because as you say, it's such a powerful piece of information. What's preventing us from saying, hey, Alexandra, what are your concerns? What makes people not use that question as often as they could or should?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. And I'm thinking about this. I think in part, it's because we're scared, right? We're scared that if we ask somebody about their concerns, if I ask Lauren about her concerns, I'm opening Pandora's box and then all the snakes come out. And I'm not going to know how to handle it. The thing is, you will know how to handle it. And I'll tell you what to do. If you ask somebody about their concerns and they raise some stuff with you, that's great. The number one thing you do is not respond. You don't need to respond. What you need to do is to summarize those concerns. So to say, Craig, okay, so to recap, you're concerned about a couple of things. One, right now, you're concerned about present cash burn. And the reason you're concerned about that is because of your investors. The second thing you're concerned about is the messaging around bringing an outside speaker into the company right now. What kind of message that's in, right? So in other words, you summarize the concerns and then you ask the person for feedback. Not only does this buy you time to then think about the concerns, it does the most important thing. They want to know that you've heard the concerns. If you have genuinely honored what somebody has said, you are so much more likely to do a deal. But I also want to tell you guys that most of the time when you open the box, you're not going to get snakes coming out of it. Okay. Here, can I give an example? During this book marketing period, I have a client that I've done a ton of work with. And when I say we have such a relationship of trust, I have now done so many client engagements for them. They call me, we're friends. We talk a lot. I had done a bunch of speaking work for them and I had a bill that was outstanding. And so I wrote to them a couple months ago and I was like, hey, let's do a win-win here. Okay. So you guys owe me for speaking. I'm marketing a book. Here's what I propose. I propose that in lieu of paying me, you're going to buy one book for every person at the company. And so that's about maybe it's like 750 people or something like that. They wrote back and they said, sorry, that's not going to work for us. And we just want to pay you. So I was crushed for a second, Craig, but then I thought, you know, I wrote a book called Ask for More, so I'm going to call it. So I called and I said, tell me your concerns. And you know what? Here's what they said. They said, well, first of all, we haven't read the whole book. And I was like, great. I'd be pleased to put it in the FedEx to you today. You'll get it tomorrow. What else? And they said, well, we don't really have a culture of putting a book in front of our most senior members. And I said, fine. How many senior members do you have? And they said, we have about 150. And I was like, great. Okay. I'm going to send you the book. I feel like we have a lot of daylight here. Totally get the senior partner concern. Sure that you want to read the book. Let's talk next week. Do you know, I sent the book. We had that conversation and they bought more than 500 books. Okay. I didn't have to get aggressive. I didn't have to argue. I just called up and I asked a four-word question. What are your concerns? And it turned out I could totally handle those concerns. So I want to embolden people to go out and ask that question and then find me on LinkedIn or Instagram or on my website and tell me what happens when you ask that question. Because I'm telling you, you are going to turn no's to yeses more than you thought possible.
And I love that you noted, you know, the fear behind it, because I think, and how often does that get in the way of us asking a question, exploring something? And I think that's such a powerful, and we can fall into the trap of, oh, it's someone else that's getting in the way. And it's almost, okay, so what's holding me back on this? I love how in the 10 questions to negotiate anything, the first five are for me. And then the next five are, so can you talk a little more about what was the thinking? Because I think that is so powerful that the first five questions I have to ask myself before I start the negotiation.
Yes. So absolutely. And, you know, this came, Craig, out of my work as a mediator. And what I do as a mediator is I'm a third person who comes in to help people who are in conflict or who want to make a deal, and I help them negotiate better. So I'm their negotiation coach. And what I do is I first help them get inside their own brain, you know, like hold up a mirror to them so that they can see themselves and their situation more clearly. And then I sit them down with somebody else and I help them open up a window between the two of them. And so that is where the book came from. It's the mirror and the window. And in fact, a little behind the scenes for your audience here, the original title of the book when I sold it was Mirrors and Windows, before Simon & Schuster gently suggested that people might be looking for me in the home improvement section. So we changed it, and actually I think Ask for More is a much better title. Okay. So here's what I want to say. If negotiation is steering, what is the most important relationship of your life? It's the one you have with yourself. And what I found is that most people in negotiation, the problem they were having is what I call a negotiation one-car accident, right? Where they were bumping up against the conflicts in their own brain and they hadn't known the right questions to ask themselves. The fact is that we're asking ourselves questions all day long, just like we're asking other people questions all day long. But most of the questions we ask ourselves are really not great. They keep us stuck in blame or in inaction. You know, like why? Why haven't I gone in to ask for more? Why haven't I lost weight? Why can't I make my, you know, relationship happier? And so when you change those questions, you change your entire reality and you arrive at the negotiation table or the Zoom platform these days with so much more clarity and confidence.
Well, and then reading those five questions for myself, and I thought about it personally as well as my role as a coach, just how if we're not clear on those questions before we embark on a conversation, I love that one single car accident, because you're so like you step on your own rate because you haven't thought through or you aren't clear. It's why I love the first question is what's the problem you're trying to solve? Just genius, because that is essential before I even begin to engage with someone, because if I don't know, that can be really challenging. I have another question from Tara, who says, how do you know when to walk away? Are there signs that you can to walk away from a negotiation?
Yeah, Tara, great question. You know when to walk away by arriving at the table crystal clear on what you are trying to accomplish, all of your needs. And in the first half of the book, I walk you through how to uncover all of your needs. And let me just say that as a woman, I find I'm especially likely to censor some of my needs or to say, you know, this is not a socially acceptable thing for me to need. It's not acceptable for me to say, I want to build wealth instead of just, I want to support my family. I want to build wealth and security for the next generations of my family, for example. Uncovering your needs. And I would say in particular, your needs are really what drive what we call your aspirations in negotiation. Those are your goals. Those are the things that you are aiming for. And so when you walk through the questions to ask yourself, you will arrive at the table really knowing what you can say yes to and what you can't say yes to. So it comes from the problem you want to solve, understanding your needs, grappling with your emotions. This is another one that I talk about in the mirror. It's critically important before we get to the table. And even some questions that are designed to help you arrive in a more powerful state, to be feeling really confident by the time you sit down.
Awesome. Fantastic answer. I just think, and it leads me to another question that I love that you use the F word in the book. You talk about the F word as feelings. And one of my, there are many quotes that I love and I want to share a couple of them, but you say in the book, feelings are facts. I just thought that was, so can you tell us more about that statement?
Yes. So this was a statement that my mediation mentor, my professor, Carol Liebman, told me when I first started training. She said, feelings are facts. And I thought, no, they're not. Feelings are the things that you have to get out of the way so then you can have the real negotiation. The thing is, feelings are not the things we have to get out of the way so we can make the decision. Feelings are how we make the decision. In fact, you know, there's a neuroscientist, Antonio Damasio, who studied people whose brains were totally intact, except for the part on the right that processes emotions. And what happened to those folks? They could talk through a decision all day, but they couldn't make the decision. And not even just a big decision. I'm talking about like, what do we order for dinner? They couldn't make that decision. So emotions are how we process reality. They are how we decide where to spend our time and our money. Just as advertising executives, they know how to sell stuff. They appeal to our emotions, right? And so feelings are there. I don't mean to say that feelings are as objective a reality as time or temperature. I mean to say that they exist and they control how people see reality, how we filter it, and how we make decisions. So we have to grapple with them in order to be the most successful in the negotiation room.
I think, again, an amazing piece. And one of the many things that I valued through the read is that there are challenging questions within and very provocative ones around how I'm going to approach a negotiation, how I'm going to approach a relationship. And one of those questions was that you highlighted, what are the worst or least flattering things I can need or feel in this negotiation conversation? Can you share a little more around that? I just think that is such a great question.
Yeah. And in fact, so let me share a bit about that. And then I want to share a private message I received from somebody about a week ago who read that section. So in the book, I talk about both needs and feelings. And at the end of the chapter, I say, you know, now that we've talked about all the attractive stuff that you need, right? You know, I need to serve people. I need to make a difference. I need financial freedom. I want you to think about the stuff that you wish you didn't need, but you do, right? And the reason I ask that is because sometimes we censor what we need. We go in and we say, I want to rise up in this company because I want to serve people. And that's true. But we don't allow ourselves to say, and I want to be really financially comfortable. I want to build wealth. I want a sense of achievement in my life. You know, I spoke to a couple of women who said, you know, but I'm a mom. Is it really okay to want to have a sense of achievement? You bet it is, right? But the other reason I think that it's so important to write down the stuff you wish you didn't need, but you did, is because sometimes you're going to find out when you do that, that other people's voices are in your head. And that's the reason you haven't moved forward. Okay, so a woman wrote to me and she said, I've been feeling really stuck in my business for a long time, just like I haven't been able to move. And what I tell people, Craig, is that that stuckness is a conflict, right? That is an internal negotiation that you have not resolved, because when you don't have a conflict, you make clear decisions. She felt stuck. And when that question came up, she wrote down, I need the approval of other people. She realized that what was holding her back was this imaginary chorus of people saying, oh, what's she doing? She's, you know, so ambitious, or is she neglecting the people in her life or whatever? And when she wrote it down, she released its power over her. She looked at that and thought, do I really need other people's approval? I don't. And writing that down and crossing it out was one of the most helpful things she took from the book. And she has launched herself forward now with so much confidence.
To your point, and it's a point that you make so eloquently throughout, like the different hats we wear and the different kind of conflictual emotions, and then also potentially not being honest with ourselves about some things we're uncomfortable about. And it just, that popped to me where I'm like, yeah. And then if you are not clear, you can then either make decisions or create so much internal conflict and then not ask for more or ask for the things that we most desire. And I love the mirrors and windows probably in whole group. I love the title because it's such an important piece around asking the question. Another point that you make, which I just, again, loved, would you talk about landing the plane? Can you share a little more about what that means and what makes that so important for us to do?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the mistakes I see people make in negotiation is an intolerance for silence. We're so afraid of letting there be a few seconds even of silence in the room that what we do is we ask a great question and then we wreck it by putting a bunch of words on the end. So as an example, I've seen people say, Craig, what do you need here today? Would $10,000 do it? When I see my beginning mediators do this, I almost want to clap a hand over their mouths because I'm like, no, right? So if you're in that scenario and you ask somebody, what do you need? Would $10,000 do it? They might have said five and you overpaid. They might have said mentoring, a path to advancement. I'm looking for training. I want to hear about your work-life benefits. You don't know what somebody needs. And the visual I got, you know, sometimes I would see people saying, well, tell me what's brought you here. And something I've been thinking about is this and this and this and this. And I have this visual of a plane in the air circling the airport. And I'm like, you've got to bring that plane in. You have to have the courage to walk in and say, Tara, tell me your concerns and land the plane. Because when you do, it's incredible. When you allow some silence in the room, like that startup company did, they came in. The silence was not a bad thing. It was a great thing. It was the person saying, oh my gosh, like we're about to really get to the heart of it right now. And once they allowed that silence, they got the keys to the kingdom on the other side.
And again, it's what so many points that, because early in my career on the coaching front, and it's something that continually remind myself of is that, to your point, can ask an open question and then you follow it up with a bunch of additional ones, almost like, you know, peppering someone with questions. And as you say, if you just left it there and then it creates this incredible space, and it's something that was, it's been very powerful for me and you see it all the time. And the other thing I love you talk about in the book is that our follow-up questions tend to share more about us and our assumptions than they do about other people. So when we start open, that's great. When we start to follow through, now it's more about our thing coming in. As you say, they could have been good with five.
Yeah, it's so funny. Sometimes I'll tell people they got to ask open questions and they have exactly one open question in them before they're like, all right, now here's my opinion. So they're able to say, you know, Lauren, what brings you here today? And then they're like, oh, I think that too. And here's what I want to say. And they can't hold it anymore. So I always tell people, if my favorite question is tell me, my second favorite question is tell me more. And in fact, in the book, when I talk about, I say that tell me is kind of like fishing with a giant net. And how a lot of us here in North America are used to going out on a boat and sticking a line in the water, right? That's what you do when you ask your closed question. I want people to fish with a net and then imagine that you've hauled in like 20 fish. You know, so I've asked you, Craig, about your business and you've told me, here's my R&D team and what they need. Here's my sales team and what they need. Alex, here's my HR managers and what they need. Each one of those is kind of like a fish that I've hauled into my net. And then what I want to do is I want to take like HR, R&D, sales, and I want to say, Craig, tell me more about your R&D team. Okay. Or Craig, can you, when you say your sales team has been having challenges, could you tell me more about that? In other words, you're staying open, but you are throwing out now, you know, so many more pieces of the puzzle, and you're really filling in the picture so that by the time you're ready to make a proposal, you have so much more information than you did before.
Absolutely. I think it's just such an incredibly powerful piece in the silence. And I mean, I remember my personal example where I was coaching someone and then used that very tool that you talk about in terms of just follow up with someone and just say, hey, I just wanted to chat about our last meeting, because they had a whole bunch of concerns. And when they did, the other person just filled in all of these informational gaps, owned what happened. And it was so, so powerful. This is one that I just think in this time, and then just more broadly, this just spoke on so many levels to me. You said, never make the mistake of assuming that you know what someone else's needs are just because their demands sound familiar. That to me was kind of like, wow, there's so many, that is just, I feel like printing that out and putting it on every wall of every office space.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny because especially as we get more senior in whatever sphere we're in, I just imagined, I think it was it Lauren as a, you know, as a salesperson rising in the ranks. And after a while, maybe your client's demands sound the same. And the demand is the tangible thing that people want to put in a contract. If you're in a lawsuit, the demand is you broke the contract and you owe us $100,000. I've actually done programs for people who deal with talent in Hollywood, and they talk about dealing with agents. Let me give that as an example. And you might have five different agents who say, I'm the agent. The Alex Carter client does not get out of bed for less than $20,000 a day. Now, I might then be tempted to assume that the $20,000 a day means nothing but money, and it means the same thing to everybody. You know, so in trying to negotiate with them, I might just be thinking about, well, I got to get the price down a little bit, and they're probably concerned about money. But that's not always the case. For one person, $20,000, yes, may represent an ability to support themselves. For another person, $20,000 means, how much am I respected on set? What does this mean about my status versus the other actors? For another person, right, $20,000, let's say, for example, that, you know, the actor is a Black woman. And so $20,000 means I am fighting for equality. It means that they value me and my work, and that this is a set where I'm going to be treated, you know, with respect and really included. Money, first of all, is never just about money, right? It always stands for other stuff. But never make the mistake of thinking that just because the demand is the same, I want $20,000, that what's underneath it is the same. In my work as a mediator, I mediate a ton of cases, like, for example, sex discrimination cases. And if you have two women who come into my office and they say, Alex, I work at an agency, a federal law enforcement agency, and I was denied a promotion solely because I'm a woman, okay? One woman, the promotion might mean that she's able to provide for her children. For another woman, the promotion might mean, I don't want this to happen to any other woman at the office ever again. It's much more about systemic change. And so the settlements for those cases could be very different depending on what's underneath that identical demand.
And I love also how in the book, and you're touching on this now, how you separate tangible versus intangible needs. And even though most of us, maybe the majority, and even when I read it, it was like, money can be an intangible. And then you're like, well, it's pretty tangible. And then just as you point out, like there can be so many pieces underlying, even if it's something we think is the most tangible, what it represents to us could be very, very different.
That's absolutely right.
You also talk about one of the questions being, what is the first step? I think it's, again, a genius question. So what makes that such a powerful thing to ask ourselves, ask other people?
Yeah, I think sometimes we complicate things. And I say we because I do it all the time. May I say, especially when I'm facing a really large goal, you know, I'm thinking about, how am I going to take my company the next 5 years into the future? Or how am I going to take steps to resolve this relationship that's really been troubling me for a long time? And I think sometimes we make the mistake of thinking that we have to solve everything right then. But most worthwhile things in life cannot be solved by just sitting down in a half an hour and then like you're set on your career for the rest of your life. All you really need is one step. You know, if you come up with more, that's great. But I heard a saying that we greatly overestimate what we can do in a week, but we greatly underestimate what we can do in a year or 2 years or 3 years. And that is really just one step at a time. And I find that when I'm counseling people in negotiation and I ask for them just for the first step, what happens is then we generate some momentum. And then it's almost like a marathon where you've run around the curve. You're like, I don't know where the finish line is. But you run around the curve and then you're like, oh, I can see now where the next mile is. And that's how it goes. You just need to keep running the piece that's in front of you. And when you do that, the next turn will be obvious. You know, there was a time when I thought, God, I don't know how the hell I'm going to write a book. Like I have a day job. I teach. I mediate, have a lot going on and not for nothing, but I'd never written a mainstream book before. I'd only written law review articles. And I didn't have the foggiest idea of how to do it, but I did know how to get onto Google and type, how do I write a nonfiction, you know, book proposal? And I came up with a website. And then I thought, okay, now I think I know somebody I can call to get a sense really of what this should look like. Step, 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 step. And when you take it one step at a time, again, I want you to come find me like in 6 months or whatever and tell me the world-rocking things that you accomplish just by doing one step a day.
I love it. And I love how you highlight that when I take that, I can be overwhelmed with the enormity of the task in front of me. And I love that you share that story in the book about your own process of start writing a book. And then it's like, okay, what's the first thing? And then it's like, okay, yeah. And then what's the next thing? And then that builds that sense of forward momentum and progress. And it just kind of makes us much, again, so, so powerful. And I can't wait. Please share the stories back as well, because I think it does lead to transformative events in our lives. The discussion on money prompted some questions. I have another one from Tammy. So on the money front, any tips on how to express what is behind our ask?
Yeah, that is a great question, Tammy. And I think, you know, of course, this depends on the level of trust you have with your manager and also what's underneath that. Tammy, I do want to say, you know, woman to woman, when you go in to make your ask, I want you to focus not just on what you need, but also really on what the company needs and why they need you, right? So in other words, I want you to make crystal clear, you know, the I, we, right? I want the we to be really backed up. And I want them to feel rock solid sure about all of the value that you are bringing to the company. That being said, I do think it's important to share, and it can be really useful to share some of the reasons behind the why, the I, right? In fact, I have done this when I've negotiated for speaking fees with clients. So being real here on the webinar today. And part of what I do when I negotiate is I share with people that my mission is empowerment and equity through negotiation. That when I negotiate and when I teach, my mission is to create spaces where each and every person can reach her highest and best or their highest and best, and where we are coming together to ensure equality and that everybody has a seat at the table. And I tell them openly that part of why I negotiate is not just to value my time, but it's also to teach them what kind of a negotiator I am, because don't you want somebody who's training your people to also know how to tactfully negotiate? I'm demonstrating that I'm living my worth. But the second thing that I tell them is I have a mission also on behalf of women. And so when I negotiate for my worth at the table, like I want you to know that this is part of my mission is to raise the tide for all women, you know, who are historically underpaid when it comes to speaking engagements and everything else. And so this is part of my need and what drives me when I sit down with you at the table today. Gotta tell you, I'm living my values and it's also really effective. And so I would think to yourself what your needs are. And if you're going in to ask for a promotion and raise, I would also share, like, I want you to know that this comes from a deep desire for growth and advancement. Those are very important to me. Service to this company is also really important to me. And so I wanted you to know that those are the things that are driving me as I sit down at the table with you today. I think that shows leadership and confidence.
That's amazing. No, I have a great, great answer. And I have a question now from James, who asks, so love the questions about what do you need? What are your concerns? What happens if someone says, I don't know, or they're really struggling? How do you deal with someone who isn't sure? You ask these great questions and then they're unsure of what do I do in that case?
Yeah, that's a great question. And let me say, especially right now, you might get people who say, I don't know, or I'm not sure. And so I want to think about this a bit, because part of it is that right now, in particular, people are experiencing a lot of stress and perhaps even trauma. And when people are in trauma, there are a few different responses you can get. You can get a flight response, you can get a fight response, or you can get like a freeze. And I actually have had conversations with partners that I have worked with many times where I would, you know, usually they would come to me and say, Alex, here's what we need. Here's the range. You know, what do you think? We'd talk about it and we'd just write up the agreement. This time they're like, so we meet you this summer. And I would say, you know, tell me more about what you're thinking. And they were like, I don't know. I can't think. And that was because stuff is changing all the time. And so I shifted my questions to say, okay, what can I do to help? Right. So I stayed open for a bit. What can I do to help? When you say you don't know, what do you think is getting in the way, right? Sometimes you can ask questions like that, nice and open to help the person, right? Think about this. If that's not working, I would think about a step that you can take to make it easier for them. So in this case, I went to a more closed question and I said, person, would it be helpful if I just submitted a proposal, if I thought about everything I could do for you, okay? And then you look at that and you have something to think about and respond to. And they were like, yes, that sounds great. Right. And so may I say, we ended up doing all of it. So it worked out really well because I really thought about what they needed. And I wrote down, if I were going to do everything, here's what I would do. And they looked at it and they were like, that's great. Let's do all of that. So I would say then, you know, if this is especially somebody that you trust and you sense that they're having trouble processing, you know, don't patronize. Certainly, I'm just saying, I'm here to help. Let me take this step. Let me know if that would be helpful. And then you can solve that and hopefully move on.
Awesome. Well, this is another question from Allison, who's wondering, so as a leader in my organization, how can I negotiate with my employees? And maybe this is an extension of the last question around, how can I negotiate with my employees in terms of what they need from me and what they need during this challenging period?
All right, Allison. So thank you, first of all, for asking this question. And, you know, I think that a lot of leaders should be asking themselves this question. And I'm really glad that for your folks that they have you as a leader and you're asking this question. I would say, as a leader myself and somebody who leads a team of students and other colleagues doing a bunch of work, what I have found is it's not just the message, it's also the forum. So I do think that having open spaces where people can talk as a group is important. Having individual space is also critical to the extent you can provide it. I have found as a leader, my team really trusts me. We have a great working relationship, but you know what? We're all over Zoom. It's different. They're not in my office. In my office, you know this, Allison, as a leader, you can smell from somebody's body language that they have something they need to tell you. Over Zoom, it's much, much harder. And so I found that when I had one-on-ones with people, they would say to me, so I didn't want to say this in the group, but my family member is sick, right? Or I'm having this particular issue. So I would say creating those group spaces for people to come together and support one another, but also individual space for people to raise to you what's happening. And I do also think that an open question like, tell me what you need, you know, or tell me what the last few weeks have been like for you personally and professionally is really important. I also think, you know, it's important for you, Allison, as a leader to be asking yourself, you know, what are the problems I want to solve? And then to be transparent with your team, to get out there and lead and say, I want you to know that I don't just have business objectives for our company this next quarter, that I have personal objectives around supporting you and continuing to foster the kind of culture that we all want here. So I want to be transparent about my objectives and to let you know that I'm going to be working to achieve those. And if there are ways that I can do that, that would be effective for you, I am opening the lines of communication and saying, please let me know. So that type of thing, being intentional and really thinking to yourself about what it is that I'm solving and how I'm going to do that.
And well, and I love that again. And it's kind of that pulls coming back to being clear with ourselves around, and then being able to have that clarity within ourselves. And then also the degree to which we're able to communicate that effectively to the people around us. I think that's so powerful, and then gives them cues about what we're trying to achieve and really have the most fruitful conversation. I can't get over that we're basically out of time. I've had so many comments. Like, so just to thank you. Thank you, Alexandra. This has been amazing. Someone said, I ran out of notes on my page writing this down. This was just jam-packed full of insights. And every single person on the webinar, I would encourage you to get the book. I mean, to me, it's amazing. It was an instant Wall Street Journal bestseller.
Yes.
So I mean, it just shows how incredible. It's just jam-packed. So please go order the book, check out the website. I'm thrilled to hear. Thank you for sharing around the webinars and courses you're going to be offering. So I think that's going to be fantastic. But Alexandra, this has just meant so much. You are, there's so much going on, and I really appreciate you. You took the hour to share your insights with everyone here this morning. Any final words before we go? Tell me about the final words you'd like to say.
Sounds great. So I always like to say, when I train people, that now we're colleagues for life. I welcome you as my new colleagues, and I'd love for you to stay in touch and let me know everything that you go on to achieve. You can find me on my website, which is alexcarterasks.com. I have some free downloads there that might be useful to you during this time. You can sign up for my email list and be the first to know about the courses. You can find me on LinkedIn, of course, and on Instagram, only if you like cooking and kit pictures, at Alexandra B. Carter. I look forward to staying in touch.
That's amazing. Well, and I'm going to share that through the newsletter as well, and provide the links, because there's just so much value. And again, thank you so, so much for your time. And it's just been an absolute pleasure. I really appreciate your energy, your insights, and your willingness to share so openly with people. And now more than ever, as you say, like, these skills and the ability for us to navigate is so essential. So have a great weekend, everyone. Alexandra, thanks again. This has been an absolute pleasure and a joy.
Appreciate it.
All right. Take care, everyone. Go buy the book.
Ask for more.
Yeah, that's right. Ask for more.
Thank you so much for joining me here today on Do Good to Lead Well. If you enjoyed today's podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. If you'd like to continue the conversation, you can follow me on Twitter at Craig Dowden, or reach out via LinkedIn or email info@craigdowden.com. I look forward to meeting you here next week for another transformational episode.